There's a Torah on Perek Yud, Seif Tes, on page Samach. This entire paragraph of Chuk is talking about Sisrei Torah, learning Pnimius HaTorah, and how that affects us. And even those who are unprepared for the greatness of Pnimius HaTorah can have a shaychus to it, and must have a shaychus to it. These next few seifim, this one in particular, is very, very hard. Even to translate, I'm not sure. Some of the words, I'm only b'derech efsha, there's no English translation of the Aris HaTorah. And Rav Kook has, as we know from all the years of learning, that there are ways that he uses Lashon HaKodesh that are just not found anywhere else. And there are words that are new, at least to me. I'm trying to understand how to just to translate, just to touch the words. So that's the best we could try, is to translate, to understand. But in advance, I'm saying that there are words that are not being accurately translated. And just to try, hopefully, to get the general meaning of what he's saying. Hamayan ha'elyon. Hamayan ha'elyon, the Fuku often refers to Pnimius HaTorah as the Ma'ayan, the wellspring ha'elyon, the supernal, the great, exalted Ma'ayan, the wellspring. Mekor Emes Ein Sof, which is the source of infinite truth. Mekor Emes Ein Sof. Yoifi Ein Keitz, endless beauty. Gvura ein gvul. Gvura, strength and might and power without boundaries. Gvura ein gvul. Hoylechu mefakir b'mekayra shal razi atar. All of this, mekar emes ein saif, yoifi ein keitz, gvura ein gvul. All of this, all of this appears, all of this flows out, emerges from the makar of Rosei Torah, from the secrets of Torah, from the makar of Rosei Torah. All of Torah is beautiful. Every diuk in a Rashi and a Tosfos is beautiful. And when we trace it back all the way to where it comes from, it comes, of course, from the Torah, which is the Ratzon Ha'Elyon. But when a person learns Pnimius HaTorah, he's coming directly into contact with that Mekar Emes Ein Sof, Yoifi Ein Keitz, Gvura Ein Gvul. The beauty without any end, and Gvura and Emes, all of this is flowing. All of this is very, very tangible. When we're Isaac in the intangible of Pnimius HaTorah. Oymed hu leichosek bedrishas Isaiah. And this great beauty and this great strength of the Ma'ayan Ha'elyon, of the wellspring from above, is Mizgala, can be seen in all the bedrishas Isaiah through learning the depths of the letters of Torah. Bedrishas Oisi Oiseha, or the Oisius. Bedrishas Oisi Oiseha. Rav Kook has a whole chibur, a whole sefer, Reish Milan, probably the most difficult of all of his svarim. Reish Milan is on the Oisius, on the letters of the Aleph Beis, on the Nekudas, Oisi Oiseha, Tziyureha, the Oisius, every Ois, its gematria, its shape, the shape of each letter. For yourself, how it appears in words, the letters, meaning the Rashi Tevas, the Sefer Tevas, the Gematrias, all of this. B'chol Orches Habitui Hamachshavti V'Halashayni. In every path, in every form of expression of thought and language, meaning the Mayan Hell, the Makar Emes Ein Sof Yofi and Kates Gvur Ein Gvul, you feel all of these, you feel all of this, even when uncovering the mysteries of the Isis, of the Gematrias, of the Resha Tevis and the Sefer Tevis, which the Mukubalim are Isaac Aladdin. In Sisra Torah, there's a tremendous amount on the Isis, on the Shemus of Hashem, and the letters, and so on. Uchshan neshama loya, nikol hamitzar, asher b'madorei hagvul. When the neshama grows weary, when the soul of the Jew grows tired and weary, nikol hamitzarim, from all of the mitzarim, from all of the constrictiveness of life. That's what Mitzrayim was about. We were talking about that yesterday in the Shir, in the city, the Indian of the Chazal said that a slave was never able to escape from Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim had a perfect record. Nobody escaped from Mitzrayim. There were people who escaped from some concentration camps. There were such things, but from Mitzrayim, nobody escaped. And that pachad of the inescapable Mitzrayim of life exists until this day. And in many ways, it's stronger much now when there are no guards and there's no barbed wire. It's much stronger in certain ways. The constrictedness, the smallness, the Mitzrayim, and the neshama grows weary. A Yiddish neshama can't live in such a way, can't go on day after day in that small world. Asher b'madoei hagvul. Asher b'madoei hagvul, that this, the Mitzrayim that exist in the madoei hagvul means the knowledge, human knowledge that is confined, that is limited, that is not Ein Sof. When a person learns Sisrei Torah and he gives himself over to that Torah, which is much easier when you're learning Sisrei Torah, as I spoke about in the earlier weeks, we don't find pilpulim in Sisrei Torah. The whole inyan of Sisrei Torah is that a person stands back and is awed and overwhelmed by the unleashing of that infinite light, infinite gvur, infinite truth, and so on, and beauty. So it takes away the kashas that a person would ask. And when you see something, you can ask all kinds of kashas. If you read about the Grand Canyon, so you could have all kinds of kashas. Well, it's like this, how it comes like that, and why. But when you're actually standing by the Grand Canyon, you don't have any kashas. It just takes your breath away. I was never there. But that's what people told me. It, when you stand over there, it's something like, whoa. You could learn all about Yerushalayim, and you could read all the, and you could read all the Svarim, you could look at all the diagrams. But when you come to the Har Bayis, it's just... So, what are the kashas? No kashas. So, the neshama grows tired of the constricted life, world, the Mitzrayim, of Madoi Hagvul, of human Seichel Ha'anoishi, the confines, the borders and boundaries of human intellect, of the mind. Hashifas Hatsuror is Bitchumim Tzarim, and all of the great aspirations and longings that we have, that the Neshama has, that are held back and bound, b'tchumim tzarim, in very, very narrow and small tchumim, boundaries, borders, domains. So the neshama wants Ein Sof. The neshama is interested in the infinite. And it grows tired, day after day, week after week, month, years, of what? Of being in Mitzrayim, of being stuck in the mitzarm of human intellect, and the neshama is filled with such infinite she'ifas, with such longing, and the she'ifas are tzurus b'tchumim tzarim, are being held back b'tchumim tzarim. Every year, I like to mention, you know, the Torah that Rav Kook has on Halach Ma'anyet, which Rav Kook talks about. Why is it that, and other Mefarshim ask the question, but the way Rav Kook explains it, the poetry, it's impossible to give over, but the part that Rav Kook says is that you see at the beginning of the Haggadah, it's such a strange thing. The Halach Ma'anya, Kol Dichem Yisrael, Kol Dichem Yisrael. Whoever wants to come over here and is invited to eat, and whoever needs to come to have the Pesach, right? That's what we say at the beginning of the Seder. Halach Ma'anya. So if Cook asks, as many Mefarshim do, what kind of an invitation is that? And it doesn't it's not particularly impressive as far as being a gracious invitation. You're already standing by the Seder. And when there's a Korban Pesach, it's even a bigger kasha, because of course that's Ein Nechel Ella Lemenuyah. Whoever was eating at the Pesach Seder, but the Korban Pesach was already determined before, was designated before. You can't all of a sudden say, look out the window and say, come on in. Everything was already set. So if Cook asks, what kind of invitation is this? Kol Dvichin Yesu Eichel, Kol Ditzach Yesu Yisach. What are you talking to? Everybody's here. So Rav Kook says an unbelievable thing. He says that for so many years, the neshama of Am Yisrael, the neshama of Jews, and Nishmas Am Yisrael, was held back in Mitzrayim. The essence of a Jew, the trademark of a Jew, is chesed, is kindness, is to do, is to give. An eved of a slave can never give, because he doesn't have anything. He's just an eved. He doesn't have anything. Even what he has belongs to his master. He doesn't have. And therefore he's unable to give. So if Cook says that when it comes to Leil Pesach, and Am Yisrael is freed from the Meitzarim that make a person small and selfish in the artificial world of Mitzrayim, the Tum of Mitzrayim, that is holding back the natural flow of a Jew, which is to give, to do for other people, to go beyond the borders of himself. All of a sudden, when the borders come down, when the fence falls down, the wall of Berlin, when it collapses on Leil Pesach, and a Jew is free, he screams out intuitively. It rises from the very depths of his neshama. Kol dichvin, kol ditzach. Not that there's any real invitation, because everybody's already here. But it's like a scream that comes from the place of the neshama, that is a scream that I want to be able to do for the whole world. I can't. I was held back. My chesed, my givingness, my invitation has been held back for so long because of Mitzrayim, because of the Mitzrayim of life. And now that I'm finally free. Rav Kook says, it's not speaking to anybody in particular, because everybody's already at the site. I mean, whoever's supposed to be is here. It's an expression of being a free person. When a Jew is free, he's free to be himself. To be oneself means to be thinking of others. That's what it means to be oneself. But the whole tachlis of being a Jew is to get out of oneself. And to get out of the mitzvah of oneself. So what Rav Kook is describing here is the neshama is tired. The neshama is so tired of being stuck in the mitzvah. I should wonder that the mitzvah of human understanding, of human intellect, of my trying to figure things out, and my svara, and my kilpul, and so on, which is all very, very good, but it's mitzvahing. It's also mitzvah. And then, besides that, the she'ifas hatzrus b'tchum mitzvahing, the she'ifas, the longings that are held back. Leil Pesach is the night when those sheifas are, free to find expression. That's why it's called Amarba L'Sapra Harizam Shubach. Kolamarba, everything by Pesach is ribui. Ribui is a shefa. Kolamarba. Because when a person is enslaved, he also stops having big sheifas. This is something that my father spoke to me about many times. That one of the most painful things that they went through in concentration camp, and they spoke about afterwards. When they were there, everybody was like paralyzed. But afterwards, they would talk about that. Was that whatever hopes or dreams that people had, that they grew up with. So everybody has certain sheifas, whether it's sheifas and ruchnias or sheifas, even a gashmias to be accomplished in something in the world, whatever it is, to be a big musician, to be a big scientist, to be a big talmid chacham, whatever. But the sheifas, it's natural and healthy for people to grow up with sheifas. My father always would tell us how, when they were there in concentration camp, everything was katnus. Everything was Mitzrayim. There are no sheifas anymore. It's just, is it going to be possible? How is it going to be possible for me to get another tiny little portion of something to eat? Is it going to be possible? How am I going to get to a spot on this plank where I can have room to move my arm an inch? These were the sheifas. What happened to the sheifas? I want to be this, I want to be that. The sheifas were... And my father always used to say that when he hears the people talking about how, there was people writing poetry or something in the concentration camp, my father always shakes his head and says, could be there was something like that. I never heard any poetry. I don't know. He says, poetry. Didn't hear. I never heard any recitals. it was just one thing. Just to survive, just to somehow, an extra ounce of oxygen, an extra half an inch to move, and an extra lick of a piece of moldy bread. That was all it was about. And it's a terrible thing when a person is in such a mitzrayim that his sheifas are held back. And there was something of Yitzias Mitzrayim that took place with all of the confusion and sickness after the Milchama, but there was a certain unleashing of Kaichas that caused terrible things for some of the people, and other people brought about such unbelievable godless after being held back for those years. What a godless! How did this whole so-called Torah world in America, where did this come from? There were Yidden that were living here, not that people were not doing anything, but that there were Yidden that were living here in America for already 200 years. There were Yidden that were here. And then already from the middle 1800s, there were some exceptional Talmidei Chacham that were in America. Exceptional Talmidei Chacham that were in America. In Newark and in Omaha, Nebraska, they had in Des Moines, you had these Gedolei Olam. Reb Chaim Oizer had a cousin, Gedolei Olam. They were in different places in New York, besides in New York, that you had some very, very great people over here. But it didn't take off. They were trying to do their best. They were tzaddikim. They were trying to do their best. And of course, there was a very big barrier between the old world and the new world. And they didn't speak the language. There were big barriers. But I don't think Rav Aaron Cutler spoke English either. And I don't think that Satmar Rebbe ever read Shakespeare either. What happened? It was on many levels. There were many things that were going on, but I always felt that after being held back, after the creativity and the kedusha of Klal Yisrael was stifled, was so brutally stifled for those years, there was such an explosion of Yiddishkeit, of koiches. There were those who just were tired and they just said, forget it. Many of them came back afterwards, but they were very tired. They were broken. And nobody says a word. None of us could ever judge such a thing. But you look at the productivity. But the Friedrich Lubavitcher Rebbe, that he came here during the war, the whole Meisa with him, with Warsaw, and how he got out. The Friedrich Lubavitcher Rebbe came off the boat. So you figured, take a week or two, you know. Like, the Chassidim would have sent him to Honolulu. There were some wealthy Chassidim here in New York. Take a week, take a break, you know. A little bit. It's coming to you. Came off the boat, and he said, the first thing he says, America's no different. He didn't go for this whole thing, oh, it's finished for Fallon, for Fallon, for Fallon. The Bible, the Fita Gurby said, that's it. It makes no difference. This is where we are now, and we're going to make it here. And that was the attitude of those other tzaddikim. Of the Sheyus HaPleita, the Klausenberger, and the Satmarov, and the other tzaddikim. They came here, the Bava Rebbe, they came here, and they exploded. And within a relatively short time, I mean, it took some time, but within a relatively short time, what they were able to accomplish, which we see in America, for Darius in America, there wasn't, even though there were some very talented people here, very, very great Talmidei Chacham. There were some Chassidish Rebbes too, but they had little thing with 25, 30 people to make a yeshiva, to make a cheder, to make something here in America before World War II. There were, but it was painfully difficult, and the numbers were very, very small. And hashpah, there was hardly any hashpah at all on the community. There was hardly any hashpah at all on outside of the walls of. You had in New Haven, there was yeshiva from before, and you had Yitzchak Elchanan, you had RJJ, you know, you had Tervadas, there were a few places. But they were struggling just to have a few handfuls of Bachrim. What happened after the Melchama? Because the creative koiches, the energy, it's Ein Sof within Klal Yisrael, was being held back. And when something is held back, when it's freed, it comes out in a very, very violent way. Violent good. That's another reason why the whole Indian of the Seder Lo Pesach is question and answer. Which we spoke about a little bit last week. What's the Indian of question and answer? Question is when something is held back, and the answer is when something is freed. If someone just releases information into your life, one of the problems that's nowadays with the technology is that people are bombarded by information, right? It's like all over the place, everything. A person wants to know something about Ulysses S. Grant, so he presses the computer and then he gets all that, boom. Doesn't have to do any drisha v'chakir, doesn't have to go to a library to pull out the thing and to look up in the Dewey Decimal and to whatever it was called and to go find the book and to go look and to do some research and to not understand and to wonder and to ask and then after asking to have an answer. There are no questions anymore. The questions are meaningless nowadays. Everything are answers. But the Seder Lo Pesach is dafka over the question and answer, because the same way when the body, the same way that the reason of the blood is able to have such power and to reach every single tiny little part of the body is because it's held back. And when it's held back, when finally it's released, and that's how breathing works and the blood, when it's released, it's able to have such force that the blood is able to reach everywhere because it was held back. It's able to reach everywhere. And that's how the Seder is. Question. A question means I don't understand. I don't know. we see that nowadays, that this is something, I've spoken about this many times, that nowadays this is not looked hardly upon to have questions. It's not the boy in the yeshiva that has too many questions, not talking about numbers, but he has questions, let's say, that he doesn't understand certain things in Emunah. Or the girl that's asking in seminary basic questions about Emunah gets people nervous. Because you're not supposed to have questions now. Everything's supposed to be just answers. Everything's supposed to be ready-made. The same on the computer. This goes into everything in life. But the only way that an answer can reach every part of a Jew, it can reach every part of the neshama, is when it was held back with a question. Is when there was a wondering, when there was an asking, when there was a not knowing. And that itself gives the answer the force to reach every single atom. You have teachers, especially with younger children. If it's a very effective teacher, especially with children, the teacher knows how to ask questions. And will give the kids questions, things to think about. In class, and the class is presented in such a way. Not a lecture, but questions. And when the children are left in the dark, and they're trying, and then when they come to the answer, there's a powerful breakthrough, and that answer then is able to make a difference in a person's life. But when there are no questions, there are only answers. So then people don't have a chias, and the answers don't change people's lives. So we're living in a time where everything is just answers. Everything's just information. There's no mystery anymore. There's no questions. Questions are seen as being dangerous. So the answers don't travel that very far. They don't travel very far. And the whole Seder is question and answer. If it would be written nowadays, it wouldn't be written question and answer. If somebody would make a Haggadah nowadays, it would be just all kinds of information with boxes on the side in gray and on the borders, all kinds of things, and just blasting. It would be just a big blast of information. Wouldn't be in such a way of she'ela and tshuva. But the Torah says, your children are going to ask you. The children now don't have to ask anything because everything is given to them. And it's not only information, it's with everything in life. It's with everything in life. No one has to ask for anything anymore because everything is thrown at him. Everything is thrown at him. And that's on so many levels that it's happening on so many levels in so many ways. Hashem's Baruch made us in such a way where an answer is meaningful and it's appreciated and it changes you because it comes after a question. That's why a Baal Tshuva is called a Baal Tshuva, I explained many times. Because he had questions and he found the answers. It's much harder when you're born into a firm family. Because if you're born into a firm family, they don't have any questions. When you don't have any questions, it's very good. Baal Tshuva, the Yiddishkeit in the Baal Tshuva is very, very strong and it reaches every part of his existence because he had questions. And his Yiddishkeit is an answer to the question. And when the Yiddishkeit is an answer to a question, it's very powerful. Look at the kids in our neighborhood. Some of them are sitting here. Look at the kids in our neighborhood who were not brought up, for lack of a better term, Haredi, Yeshivish, whatever it is. They weren't brought up as Bnei Torah and Bnei Torah. They weren't brought up that way. They were brought up much more modern. But they had questions. And they were wondering about things. And what they saw was bothering them. Is this what the Bnei Shalom wanted? People walking around in a kiddush, miniskirts and suits kissing each other. I don't mean husbands and wives. That would be self-embarrassing. I mean other people's husbands and wives. This is what the tachlis is. This is what Shabbos is supposed to be about. This is what Yiddishkeit is supposed to be about. So the chevra that grew up in the modern Orthodox homes, they had big questions. They had big kashas. And when they found it, when they find the teretz, and when they come to the teretz, when they get the answer, the Yiddishkeit is very, very strong. In many ways, much stronger than the people who didn't have the questions. And many of you are the living proof of that. Much stronger. Much stronger. They wouldn't know what to do in Borough Park in Williamsburg if we let some of you guys and girls loose there. And just say, run around here, like, you know, open up a box and say, go ahead. They wouldn't know what to do with you. They wouldn't know what to do with you. Coming to a shul, then you start to make a fire. And here, the chevet, they were davening, that have the Ben Azmanim chevet, that Bezal was working on putting together, the guys over here, they're davening, the whole building was shaking. The whole building was shaking. And I told you that a few summers ago I had my mother's cousin passed away in Williamsburg, and we were downstairs, and they always make levayas, you know, they make on the street. They don't have a chapel or anything like that. They make outside. And I got there a little bit early. I mean, I was there on time, but it didn't work out over there, being on time. So there was nobody there. The mace also wasn't there. I was there, and my parents, my sister, me, my parents. That was it. None of my cousins were there, and it was for Levaya. So I thought maybe this is the wrong. But no. It was the right place. But so there was downstairs from Bis Medrash. It was very hot. I remember. I was downstairs from Bis Medrash, and we saw that nothing was happening. So I was worried about my father. And it was very hot, and there was no place to sit. And I said, there's a Bis Medrash, let's go upstairs over here. And we'll wait, and we'll see from the window when the oilam is coming. So we went up in the Bis Medrash. There was some air conditioning to go into the Bis Medrash. So they were still davening. It was like, I don't know, like 10 o'clock, 10:30. It was still during some davening going on. So it was like, I can't describe what was going on. I can sit like that in every Bis Medrash. It's like, this guy sitting like with his towels and tefillin, the towels over the head. And he's eating some rugelach, like this, eating some rugelach. And like a couple of guys like oh, I can't. It's the guy that was diving for them, it was like screaming. I don't know. He was like a young guy that was screaming. Could be he was the point of Altfila to have them some places. So he was getting paid to scream. I don't know. But the rest of the guys there. So I said to my father, "Why do you have to go to the Levaya downstairs? There's a base of oil right up here. There's a Levaya right here upstairs. I have to go downstairs." And I was talking after the Levaya to one of my cousins. We were walking back to the car, and I said, "What's going on over here?" He said, "What's going on? What's going on here? What's going on everywhere? It's tight. No life. You have Lebedika ones, and they usually go to certain places, certain dismeasures, and they're concentrated in that place. But here and there, like without life. There were no questions. When there are no questions, just thrown at you. There are no questions, and you just have, all you have are answers. So it's very hard to have a chiyus. The chevra that grew up more modern, or the ones that were not from at all, they were balachuva, and they were asking, what is this? What's the tachlis of my life? And they had to come up with answers. That's what the seder is about. To come up with the answers, the questions. So then you see that the Yiddishkeit, wow, the Yiddishkeit by them and by their children, by their grandchildren, is very, very stark. They're a strong Yiddishkeit, the strongest Yiddishkeit. So Rav Kook here is talking about how a person, the neshama grows weary. The neshama grows weary, mikolam etzvam eshev madoy hagvul, being stuck and being confined in that smallness. And all the she'ifas, hatsuas, betchum, tsarim, and the longings of a Jew, of the neshama, are held back. All held back. That's the question. Sha'kir v'hagil mezgalo behem. And there's a lot of ugliness. Kir means ugliness. And gi'ul means disgust. There's disgusting stuff. Which is mezgalo behem. With man's limitedness, in this world of Meitzarim, there's a lot of disgusting stuff. Which is in contrast to how Rav Kook began this season. Pnimiyas HaTorah especially is Yoifi Ein Keis. It's infinite beauty. Gvura Ein Gvul. Everything about Pnimiyas HaTorah is Yoifi Ein Keis. Gvura Ein Gvul. Everything limitless. Unlimited. Unbelievably free. And therefore it's all about, it's all beautiful. Yoifi Ein Keis. This world without that Pnimiyas. The world of Metzarim, of Mitzrayim, becomes over time filled with Ki'ur and Gi'ul, ugliness. Gi'ul is disgusting. It's Mezgalabham. It's Mezgala in what? In man's limited knowledge. In the Mitzarim of one's, in the Mitzarim of this world of human intellect. Look, all kinds of sick things that people think about and talk about and write about and sick things. So, Shakir Vagil Mezgalabhem bis Oirus Tnuosem Hashinus with his Oirus of the different movements within that world of confinement. Oz Timtzalo Machave, the Neshama can find for herself by learning by the owner of that Neshama, learning Pnimiyas HaTorah, a Jew can find a hiding place. Machaveh means a hiding place. A hiding place from the ugliness. A hiding place from the filth of this world. A hiding place from that which is so disgusting, which is the product of limited human minds and human beings who live in a small, tiny place in their Mitzarim. And the neshama of a Jew is infinite. And the Yid grows tired of being stuck in these disgusting places and this disgusting mitzvah of the world of human thought and activity. So where can the neshama run to? Oz timtzala mach be mizerim etzel tzach shel hegen rozei olam. It's able to run to the hiding place of the tzel tzach. It's a pasuk, but tzel tzach means the pure, the pristine shade. Like when it's very, very hot and you need to go in the shade. So tzel tzach. Tzach means something shining and beautiful and shining and bright and clear. Sisrei Torah is tzel tzach. It's when the world is burning you and killing you. Pnimiyas HaTorah is the tzel tzach. It's that shade, that shadow that you could go to and to hide. In the pureness of that Yoifi Ein Keitz, of Emes Ein Soif, Gvura Ein Gvul. Shel Hegyon Rozei Olam Pliyos Kodesh. In the thoughts of the highest secrets, of the universe, Pliyos Kodesh, in the holy wonderment, the holy wonders that we learn about in Pnimiyas HaTorah. Asher b'drishas Sisrei Torah. That comes from one seeking the secrets of Torah. This is all the malachim are asking. Ayei makom kavodai. Kavodim halay olam. That's the answer. But ayi mekoyim kvoidai. And where can a person run? Where can a person run? Where in that place it's kodesh, kodesh, kodesh. Where it's maloi chala arutz kvoidai. Where it's the tzel tzach. It's only in Sisrei Torah. Asher b'drisha Sisrei Torah. I really don't know what he's saying. Maybe the others will have ideas here because he says umitoich harm, and not that the dictionary knows it either. I don't know, maybe the dictionary doesn't know it either. Umitoich harm atlulim. Umitoich harm atlulim. Hanirim kiruchse mitzar. Oh, Ruchse, you're saying, is a range. Oh, so you're saying Ruchse Mitzar means mountain range?
Yes. restrictive.
That appear like a mountain range, a cliff that you can't go anywhere. Okay, so maybe that's what it means. Let's try. Let's see. Okay, let's see. Let's see, maybe that's it. Umitaycha har matlulim, hanirim kiruch seimitzar. Okay, so maybe this is what the tzaddik is saying. So when we go hiding in that hiding place of Pnimiyus HaTorah, and we're standing on that cliff, that unbelievable big panoramic view that we get of the truth, but we don't know where to go with that. That's the hiding place. But then, where do you go with that afterwards? And so, what does it mean, going back into life or leaving? But there's nowhere else to go except down from the mountain. And kiruch seimitzar. And we have in that world kivul misparim, again, all of the numbers, the gematrias, harachas gematrias, all the words, the oisius, rimzei shemos, the hints, the secrets that are in the names, zirmei mikra, that's flowing in the psukim, that the deeper meanings, halacha v'agada, or shemesh yoytzeis b'gvurasa. The light of the sun emerges in all of its power and all of its strength. Standing on that on that cliff, at the top of that mountain, so it appears to us. We look at these things, the kivun misparim, harachas gematrias, rimzei shemos, zirmei mikra, halacha v'hagada, while we're on that cliff, that again, we don't know what to do with that, but while we're on that cliff, we're able to see all of these things. Maybe this is what it means. We're able to see all of these, the numbers and the gematrias and the rimzei shemos, even halacha and hagada, everything. Or shemesh yoytzeis b'gvurasa, the powerful light of the sun, shining brightly. That brings great healing, great hope and great healing. Hine nira, we could see the sun from that vantage point on the mountaintop. We could see the sun. We could see from that vantage point. All right, where are we going to go? We have to go down from the mountain. That's true. But while we're on the mountaintop, maybe that's what he's saying. While we're on the mountaintop, we're able to look at everything. We're able to look at everything. All the numbers and the gematrias and the shemes and the halacha and hagada, everything. But we can look at it in such a way with the powerful shining light of the sun from that mountaintop. And that brings healing and faith. Hine nira, we can see this. We could see the Or Shemesh Yoytzeis B'Gvurasa. V'chol ha-mabitim eleha yinharu, v'shovu v'chayu. And whoever sees, whoever is able to look upon that light, will rush to it, will move towards it, v'shovu v'chayu, and will return to Hashem, and will live. V'shovu v'chayu, v'shovu v'chayu. He gives chiyas. Yeah, you have to go down. But while you're there, wow. Everything looks different when you're on top. Everything looks different. You see everything differently from that place. Yeshova v'chayu. That's what David HaMelech says, and Rabbi Nachman says in Sichas Aran, we spoke about, and we learned Sichas Aran. Ani yadati ki gadol Hashem. But David Mal says, "Aniyadati Yodel Hashem." I know the greatness of Hashem because I was on the mountain, I was on top of it, and I saw it. Now you want me over here? Those of you who are dwelling in the valley, you'd like me to explain to you what I saw. I can't. You have to go yourself. I can't explain to you what I saw there. I can't tell you what I saw. Artists try very hard, but there are things that you can't explain. There are writers and poets that try very hard. David HaMelech says, "Ani yadati ki gadol Hashem," but I can't explain that to you. I'll try as hard as I can, but ultimately, I'm limited because human speech doesn't have such expressions. He is able to give us the information, but to be able to give over that which is infinite. So finite words don't express that. So we try as hard as possible. But it gives life. Those things in life that give life are adafka, that which we can't really explain or talk about. Those are the most life-giving things, the ones that you can't explain. I once shared with you a poem that was written by this wonderful chosh of a woman from Yerushalayim. I never met her, but just the poetry. So she wrote this poem about how, I've read it to you two or three times over the years. And she says that how she's describing something that's unbelievably beautiful. She's trying to describe her children, but she can't. It's not possible. Even the poet can't find words to describe that feeling that a mother has. The feeling that a mother has, she says, this one, taking the little one, taking it out from the bathtub and wrapping it in a towel. And she's trying to describe this to a friend of hers who unfortunately was never married and didn't have children. Could be even maybe a feminist. And she's trying to describe this to the person next to her. She wasn't, not Shas Maisa, but afterwards, she's trying to talk about her feelings of the children. And because she has a very, very hard and busy life because there's a big family. So this woman that doesn't have any children, that didn't have children, so she's trying to understand, and she said to the woman with the kids, oh, so it's the concept of children that keeps you going? That keeps you going? So the poet sort of just shakes her head and says, it's not the concept of the children that keeps me going. It's the smell of nechama when I take her out of the bath that keeps me going. It's not the concept of nechama that keeps me going. It's the feeling of holding her in my arms that keeps me going. That's something that a person can't describe. If you have people that they'll talk about not wanting to have children. Nah, that's, I don't want to get married, I don't have children. Who needs it? I see what goes on with the screaming and yelling and diapers. Yeah. Nah, who needs it? Yoifi ain't Kate's. Emis ain't Saif. Where else do we have in human form a sense of that which is ain't Saif? You look at a child and the child is excited about something. A person has to stay attuned to that. That's something that even though, of course, she has to come down from the mountaintop. But when you have that ability to stand for a moment on top of the mountain and to look at everything and with that light, to see that light, then you can't express that in words, but that's what gives life. And that's what gives you the ability to go on living. And if God forbid a person doesn't have that in life, I don't mean children. The people are not blessed with that. But if a person doesn't have anything infinite in his life, if he doesn't have any moments to stand on top of a mountain, then what gives him life? Then where does he take his chiyas from? He takes his chiyas from Mitzrayim. The chiyas from Mitzrayim. When the Bereshit took us out, he told us, b'damayichai. With your blood, with the blood of Yiddishkeit, dam Pesach, dam Milah, b'damayichai. But the chiyas that a person has is only from that which is infinite. You could take a life of Mitzrayim. Life of Mitzrayim is choking. And a person can try to stuff himself with the life of Mitzrayim, but he gets tired, and the neshama of a Jew gets tired. A guy doesn't feel that. A guy is okay. He doesn't have to worry about that. But the neshama of a Jew grows tired. A guy can go like that till he's finished. It doesn't make a difference. He doesn't feel that. But the neshama of a Jew gets tired. It can't stand being in Mitzrayim. Ashrei kol toim tam eden elokim v'nachalei adonav. Fortunate is the person who is able to taste of that Eden of God, of those rivers of sweetness. Even though you have to come down from the mountaintop, it's true, but fortunate is the person who tastes of the Eden Elokim, the Nachle Adonav, and the rivers, the flowing rivers of his sweetness. Mitzuf Dvash Sisrei Kodesh, from the honey of the secrets of holiness. This is the secret of God that only those who fear Him know. And the covenant, Hashem's bris, He tells only to these people. Only these people know, really feel and understand the bris, that covenant that Hashem has with each and every one of us. Right, we should be zoichim Hashem to get a good helping. It's Pesach. It's Pesach, so maybe we could medalag laharim v'kapitz al gavos to have a couple of minutes on top and to get a good taste of it.